Chapter 10 The Black Gate Opens. 2 days later, the army of the West was all assembled on the Pelennor. The host of Orcs and Easterlings had turned back out of Anorion, but harried and scattered by the Rohirrim, they had broken and fled with little fighting towards Caer Andros. And with that threat destroyed and new strength arriving out of the south, the city was as well manned as might be. Scouts reported that no enemies remained upon the roads east as far as the crossroads of the fallen king. All now was ready for the last throw. Legolas and Gimli were to ride again together in the company of Aragorn and Gandalf, who went in the van with the Dúnedain and the sons of Elrond. But Merry, to his shame, was not to go with them.
"You're not fit for such a journey," said Aragorn. "But don't be ashamed. If you do no more in this war, you have already earned great honour. Peregrine shall go and represent the Shire folk, and do not grudge him his chance of peril, for though he has done as well as his fortune allowed him, he has yet to match your deed. But in truth all now are in like danger. Though it may be our part to find a bitter end before the gate of Mordor, if we do so, then you will come also to a last stand, either here or wherever the black tide overtakes you. Farewell." And so despondently Merry now stood and watched the mustering of the army. Birgil was with him, and he also was downcast, for his father was to march leading a company of the men of the city. He could not rejoin the guard until his case was judged. In that same company Pippin was also to go, as a soldier of Gondor. Merry could see him not far off, a small but upright figure among the tall men of Minas Tirith. At last the trumpets rang and the army began to move. Troop by troop and company by company they wheeled and went off eastward. And long after they had passed away out of sight down the great road to the causeway, Merry stood there. The last glint of the morning sun on spear and helm twinkled and was lost, and still he remained with bowed head and heavy heart, feeling friendless and alone. Every one that he cared for had gone away into the gloom that hung over the distant eastern sky, and little hope at all was left in his heart that he would ever see any of them again. As if recalled by his mood of despair, the pain in his arm returned, and he felt weak and old, and the sunlight seemed thin. He was roused by the touch of Beargil's hand.
"Come, Master Perian," said the lad. "You are still in pain, I see. I will help you back to the healers. But don't fear. They'll come back. The men of Minas Tirith will never be overcome. And now they have the Lord Elfstone, and Beregond of the Guard, too."
Ere noon the army came to Osgiliath. There all the workers and craftsmen that could be spared were busy. Some were strengthening the ferries and boat-bridges that the enemy had made, and in part destroyed when they fled. Some gathered stores and booty, and others on the eastern side across the river were throwing up hasty works of defence. The vanguard passed on through the ruins of old Gondor, and over the wide river, and on up the long straight road that in the high days had been made to run from the fair Tower of the Sun to the tall Tower of the Moon, which now was Minas Morgul in its accursed vale. 5 miles beyond Osgiliath they halted, ending their first day's march. But the horsemen pressed on, and ere evening they came to the crossroads and the great ring of trees, and all was silent. No sign of any enemy had they seen, no cry or call had been heard, no shaft had sped from rock or thicket by the way, yet ever as they went forward they felt the watchfulness of the land increase. Tree and stone, blade and leaf were listening. The darkness had been dispelled, and far away westward sunset was on the Vale of Anduin, and the white peaks of the mountains blushed in the blue air, but a shadow and a gloom brooded upon the Ef-el-Duath. Then Aragorn set trumpeters at each of the 4 roads that ran into the ring of trees, and they blew a great fanfare, and the heralds cried aloud, "The lords of Gondor have returned, and all this land that is theirs they take back.
The hideous orc head that was set upon the carven figure was cast down and broken in pieces, and the old king's head was raised and set in its place once more, still crowned with white and golden flowers, and men laboured to wash and pare away all the foul scrawls that orcs had put upon the stone. Now in their debate, some had counselled that Minas Morgul should first be assailed, and if they might take it, it should be utterly destroyed. "And maybe," said Imrahil, "the road that leads thence to the pass above will prove an easier way of assault upon the Dark Lord than his northern gate." But against this Gandalf had spoken urgently, because of the evil that dwelt in the valley, where the minds of living men would turn to madness and horror, and because also of the news that Faramir had brought. For if the Ring-bearer had indeed attempted that way, then above all they should not draw the eye of Mordor thither. So the next day, when the main host came up, they set a strong guard upon the crossroads to make some defence, if Mordor should send a force over the Morgul Pass, or should bring more men up from the south. For that guard they chose mostly archers who knew the ways of Ithilien, and would lie hid in the woods and slopes about the meeting of the ways. But Gandalf and Aragorn rode with the vanguard to the entrance of Morgul Vale, and looked on the evil city. It was dark and lifeless, but the orcs and lesser creatures of Mordor that had dwelt there had been destroyed in battle, and the Nazgul were abroad. Yet the air of the valley was heavy with fear and enmity. Then they broke the evil bridge, and set red flames in the noisome fields, and departed. The day after, being the third day since they set out from Minas Tirith, the army began its northward march along the road. It was some 100 miles by that way from the crossroads to the Morannon, and what might befall them before they came, so far none knew. They went openly, but heedfully, with mounted scouts before them on the road, and others on foot upon either side, especially on the eastward flank. For there lay dark thickets, and a tumbled land of rocky gills and crags, behind which the long grim slopes of the Efel Duath clambered up. The weather of the world remained fair, and the wind held in the west, but nothing could waft away the glooms and the sad mists that clung about the mountains of shadow. And behind them at whiles great smokes would arise and hover in the upper winds. Ever and anon Gandalf let blow the trumpets, and the heralds would cry, "The lords of Gondor are come! Let all lead this land, or yield them up!" But Imrahil said, "Say not the lords of Gondor, say the king Elessar. For that is true, even though he has not yet sat upon the throne, and it will give the enemy more thought if the heralds use the name." And thereafter, thrice a day, the heralds proclaimed the coming of the king Elessar, but none answered the challenge. Nonetheless, though they marched in seeming peace, the hearts of all the army, from the highest to the lowest, were downcast, and with every mile that they went north, foreboding of evil grew heavier on them. It was near the end of the second day of their march before the crossroads that they first met any offer of battle. For a strong force of orcs and easterlings attempted to take their leading companies in an ambush, and that was in the very place where Faramir had waylaid the men of Harad, and the road went in a deep cutting through an outthrust of the eastward hills. But the captains of the west were well warned by their scouts, skilled men from Heneth Arnon, led by Mablung, and so the ambush was itself trapped. For horsemen went wide about the westward and came up on the flank of the enemy and from behind, and they were destroyed or driven east into the hills. But the victory did little to enhearten the captains. "It is but a feint," said Aragorn, "and its chief purpose, I deem, was rather to draw us on by a false guess of our enemy's weakness than to do us much hurt yet." And from that evening onward the Nazgul came and followed every move of the army. They still flew high and out of sight of all save Legolas, and yet their presence could be felt as a deepening of shadow and a dimming of the sun. And though the Ringwraiths did not yet stoop low upon their foes and were silent, uttering no cry, the dread of them could not be shaken off.
So time and the hopeless journey wore away. Upon the fourth day from the crossroads and the sixth from Minas Tirith, they came at last to the end of the living lands, and began to pass into the desolation that lay before the gates of the pass of Kirith Gorgor. And they could descry the marshes and the desert that stretched north and west to the Emynweal. So desolate were those places, and so deep the horror that lay on them, that some of the host were unmanned, and they could neither walk nor ride further north. Aragorn looked at them, and there was pity in his eyes rather than wrath, for these were young men from Rohan, from Westfold far away, or husbandmen from Lossarnach, and to them Mordor had been from childhood a name of evil and yet unreal, a legend that had no part in their simple life. And now they walked like men in a hideous dream made true, and they understood not this war, nor why fate should lead them to such a pass. "Go," said Aragorn, "but keep what on you may, and do not run. And there is a task which you may attempt, and so be not wholly shamed. Take your way southwest till you come to Caer Andros, and if that is still held by enemies, as I think, then retake it, if you can, and hold it to the last in defence of Gondor and Rohan." Then some, being shamed by his mercy, overcame their fear and went on, and the others took new hope, hearing of a manful deed within their measure that they could turn to, and they departed. And so, since many men had already been left at the crossroads, it was with less than 6,000 that the captains of the West came at last to challenge the Black Gate and the might of Mordor. They advanced now slowly, expecting at every hour some answer to their challenge, and they drew together, since it was but waste of men to send out scouts or small parties from the main host. At nightfall of the fifth day of the march from Morgul Vale they made their last camp, and set fires about it of such dead wood and heath as they could find. They passed the hours of night in wakefulness, and they were aware of many things half seen that walked and prowled all about them, and they heard the howling of wolves. The wind had died, and all the air seemed still. They could see little, for though it was cloudless and the waxing moon was 4 nights old, there were smokes and fumes that rose out of the earth, and the white crescent was shrouded in the mists of Mordor. It grew cold. As morning came, the wind began to stir again, but now it came from the north, and soon it freshened to a rising breeze. All the night walkers were gone, and the land seemed empty. North amid their noisome pits lay the first of the great heaps and hills of slag and broken rock and blasted earth, the vomit of the maggot folk of Mordor. But south and now near loomed the great rampart of Kirith Gorgor, and the Black Gate amidmost, and the two towers of the Teeth tall and dark upon either side. For in their last march the captains had turned away from the old road as it bent east, and avoided the peril of the lurking hills, and so now they were approaching the Morannon from the northwest, even as Frodo had done. The two vast iron doors of the Black Gate under its frowning arch were fast closed. Upon the battlement nothing could be seen. All was silent but watchful. They were come to the last end of their folly, and stood forlorn and chill in the grey light of early day before towers and walls which their army could not assault with hope, not even if it had brought thither engines of great power, and the enemy had no more force than would suffice for the manning of the gate and wall alone. Yet they knew that all the hills and rocks about the Morannon were filled with hidden foes, and the shadowy defile beyond was bored and tunnelled by teeming broods of evil things. And as they stood, they saw all the Nazgûl gathered together, hovering above the towers of the Teeth like vultures, and they knew that they were watched, but still the enemy made no sign. No choice was left them but to play their part to its end. Therefore Aragorn now set the host in such array as could best be contrived, and they were drawn up on 2 great hills of blasted stone and earth that orcs had piled in years of labour. Before them, towards Mordor,
lay like a moat, a great mire of reeking mud and foul-smelling pools. When all was ordered, the captains rode forth towards the black gate, with a great guard of horsemen, and the banner and heralds and trumpeters. There was Gandalf as chief herald, and Aragorn with the sons of Elrond, and Éomer of Rohan and Imrahil, and Legolas and Gimli and Peregrin were bidden to go also, so that all the enemies of Mordor should have a witness. They came within cry of the Morannon, and unfurled the banner, and blew upon their trumpets, and the heralds stood out and sent their voices up over the battlement of Mordor. "Come forth!" they cried. "Let the Lord of the Blackland come forth! Justice shall be done upon him, for wrongfully he has made war upon Gondor and wrested its lands. Therefore the king of Gondor demands that he should atone for his evils and depart then for ever. Come forth!"